Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail. Woo! And the super athletic-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. I am on the road next week, on the road the week after, and actually I'm going on vacation. And I finally get some time off, and then on the road again, and on the road again. It's going to be a busy winter time early spring for me this year. So, you know, I tell everybody out there, continue to work hard, look at your property, you know, be the influencer in your environment. Make sure that you're making the right changes on your property. With the clients that I'm working on, and I'm doing some cutting with clients, timber management, you know, on-site after I do the consulting, it's really a connecting the dots type scenario where we take a plan and we start to execute. This is the time to execute on your properties. And if you're not doing any work in the field, please get motivated. It's important to start looking at your landscape, be more particular with the things that you're doing, and start to have a plan. Observation is the number one tool that you have. Use your eyes, use your ears, look at your environment. All right, enough of that foreword. I want to get into the podcast topic. We've got a brand new guest on. I'm really excited. I've listened to probably every podcast that this gentleman does, and I'm just enjoying his content and information. His name is John Kemp, very influential and I think an important asset that we have. He's an asset. I look at him as an asset in the soil industry. And I had a chance to bump into him, and I asked him to participate in the show, and we've got him on. So I'm kind of excited. Hey, John, are you on the line?
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. You know, I heard of you initially when I was talking to Dan Kittredge years ago. I went through some of his early, I guess, online YouTube information that he had out there, and just was really kind of enthralled with him. And then I listened to your podcast, and I just have been blown away with the type of folks that you have on there. The you know, it's just not soil focused. You look at such a large array of topics, some landform management. I mean, some of the stuff that I do in my business is so applicable. So I just want you to quickly introduce yourself, a little bit about your business and your podcast, and I want to talk a little bit about your products, some of the products that I use.
Well, that's a big topic. Let me see how I can compress it down. I grew up on a family fruit and vegetable farm in Northeast Ohio. And through some interesting experiences on the farm, we learned that it's possible to manage plant nutrition in such a way that plants become completely resistant to diseases and insects, and you eliminate the need for pesticides. Well, that was pretty intriguing and lots of fun. But then in addition, shortly thereafter, I discovered that when you manage plant nutrition to increase immune function, you start influencing the flavor and the quality of the food that you're growing. And you can start having a conversation about growing food as medicine, and that you regenerate soil health while you are growing these exceptionally healthy plants. So that set the foundation for thinking about agriculture from a very different perspective of what does an agricultural look like that actually has the capacity to regenerate soil health and to regenerate public health and to regenerate plant health and livestock health. It's when you start looking at things from the perspective of health and quality instead of yield, you quickly develop very different perspectives. And so from that work, I founded a consulting company called Advancing Eco Agriculture in 2006. We then eventually shifted to do some specialty product manufacturing because we soon discovered that we were making recommendations for specialty materials that people couldn't easily get their hands on, stuff like selenium and molybdenum and cobalt and some of the more unusual trace elements that weren't as readily available, microbial inoculants that were actually effective and made a difference. And about that time period, I also started working with dairy nutrition. I was asked to work on a number of 100% grass-fed dairies, and of course, if you're 100% grass-fed dairy and you want to have a balanced ration, have a balanced nutritional profile, the only way to accomplish that is to do that in the forages. And so I developed a very different perspective on soil health management and soil nutritional management to influence forage nutrition, to influence ruminant health. And it's been a fascinating journey. Flash forward to today, our consulting and products company works on about somewhere close to 5 million acres. We're a team of about 80 people working all across North America and internationally as well. And just having a ton of fun delivering. We look at plant nutrition and soil nutrition through a very different lens from the mainstream. And looking at not yield alone, but yield plus quality. And so we've had lots of interesting insights and lots of interesting developments over the years. It's a ton of fun.
great background, and the quality piece of this is why I think I latched on to you. And in similar lens, I have a similar lens to you, the way I perceive things. Being in touch with nature is a really important thing, and mimicking some of these biological systems or enhancing them, you know, making them more productive. We, a lot of times in my podcast, focus on abundance, but I'm trying to get to the point where we're focused on quality. Some of the products that I've been using recently, and I use these over the past couple of years, one of those is BioCoat Gold. I've gotten away from traditional fertilizers, the MPKs of the worlds. I want slow release, non-soluble or minimal soluble type fertilizers. Rock phosphate would be an example of one of those uses. But looking at my soil for limitations and taking a chemical approach initially, trying to balance out the soil. When I first started, you know, doing not just my business, but just improving my soil in my local area, you know, I went down the whole route of how can I do things cheaper, easy, and fast. And nothing's cheap, nothing's easy, and nothing's fast with soil. And I learned that I learned that the hard way. And I went through steps of just, you know, when do I terminate plants? How do I balance soils and root architecture? That's a big piece of this. It's just starting to get latched onto. How do you balance below and above biomass? And, you know, what are the nutrient requirements in the soils for plants and the microbes that support those plants and connecting the dots? James White, who's not been on this podcast, but I've listened to him, the rhizophagy cycle, Matt Powers, you, there's a whole bunch of people that talk about these interesting concepts. But the nutrients that are in our soils really are most often there. Sometimes they need to be released. Sometimes they need to be tweaked. There's different topics out there and how much control we want to have over things. And most of the folks don't want to get to the level, you know, at your level, you know, I look at it as an axis machine. Is it a third axis or sixth axis machine, a CNC machine? And I think a lot of people are at the 1 or 2D level. And to get to these next levels, there's a lot of research and education that goes into this, hence the benefit of a company like yours. But using like BioCoat Gold and Seed Flare have been a resource for me. I'm not adding anything really in furrow, using some inoculation to help that, I'll just say, connectivity to the soil, and trace elements in the Seed Flare. It's just kind of a spray on at a low rate, just to create that opportunity. Folks in my industry don't have good seed sources, number one, and a lot of the seeds are coated with materials that we're not so familiar with. So it creates this disconnect with your resources that you're applying in landscape. With your ultimate goal, you're trying to attract deer to your particular properties. So in that, I really kind of latched on where I may not have the best seed sources, but some of the materials I'm adding to the seed itself could be helpful. And so I want you to talk about BioCoat Gold and Seed Flare, because I think those are the two resources that they're really inexpensive, they're easy to apply, and they'll go a long way. And I think they're a great resource for folks that are trying to get away from the traditional granular fertilizer, we'll say, inoculated or coated seed. Again, that may be a benefit to the seedling itself, but you know, knowing more about your seeds, knowing more about your seed resources, et cetera. So maybe you could just dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's... So in our work on commercial scale production agriculture, I learned early on that while I was very inspired about the idea of improving soil health and growing food as medicine and growing plants that were resistant to diseases and insects, these were not, when I had these conversations with professional growers, they were intrigued by the ideas. They were even enthusiastic about the ideas, but not to the point of changing what they were doing, for the simple reason that they are often in a very high-risk environment. Many growers are under significant economic duress, and they perceived it as too risky to make changes and to try things that were an unknown. And as a result of that realization, starting over a decade ago, decade and a half ago, we started obsessing over what are the results that we can bring growers that are the greatest economic, have the greatest economic benefit. Our tagline as a company has been, ever since then, has been, we help growers make more money with regenerative agriculture. And so we have obsessed about what are the applications, what are the trigger points where you can put on products that are comparatively inexpensive and produce an outsized economic response. And the category that is a categorical winner consistently are the seed treatments. They are inexpensive to apply. They are at a very critical stage of the seedling of the plant development, and their response is completely outsized to the amount of product that you're actually applying. So Biocode Gold gets applied on probably more acres than any other product that we manufacture. It gets applied on millions of acres. It's a microbial seed treatment that includes both mycorrhizal fungi and bacteria and other types of organisms. So it's very, there's lots of inoculants that have a couple of species, or they're just mycorrhizal fungi, or they're just bacterial inoculants. There's not a lot of inoculants that effectively create what we call these synergistic stacks. So Biocode Gold was developed to be this synergistic stack of microbes that complement each other and that can be used as a seed treatment to really get seedlings off to a very strong start. And then just in the last year, we released Seed Flare, which is something we had conducted extensive experimentation on. And Seed Flare is not a microbial seed treatment, but instead is a mineral seed treatment. It's designed that you apply this liquid onto the seeds in very tiny dosages. It's actually absorbed into the seed, and it gets seedlings off. It's like pressing the accelerator to the floor on an electric vehicle. It just goes 0 to 60, boom, once that seed is planted. It's a lot of fun to see seedlings emerge and be dark green and go rapidly when you put Seed Flare on them.
John, the one thing I wonder about, and you know, the Seed Flare being, you know, numerous trace elements being applied to it, whether it's, you know, manganese, zinc, copper, et cetera. What's the relationship with the seed and the microbial community slash a lot of these growers or people in my community where they're creating these food plots for deer? They've traditionally put large volumes of nitrates, all sorts of fertilizers in the ground. Is there a problem relationship there where you have these, I guess, direct feed type resources for plants and these trace elements that just essentially kick off the plant? I mean, what's the difference, and are there limitations when you've used a traditional fertilizer and you're adding these inoculants and trace minerals in concert with the seedling?
Boy, you just raised a big can of worms. Well,
oh, great.
I'm going to answer a sidebar. A question that you didn't ask, but that we should be thinking about is when you add nitrogen fertilizer, there's a direct palatability issue. In our grazing work with deer, we know that deer don't go to all fields indiscriminately, that there is greater attractiveness in some fields and in some feed plots than in others. That is a reflection of the soil mineral profile. It's a reflection of how it's fertilized. It's a reflection of the genetics that are present. Certainly, there's a very strong plant genetic component. But the reality is, if you have cows grazing on pasture, they will avoid eating the grass around their cow pies, around the manure paths, for the very simple reason that elevated levels of nitrogen and potassium make forages and plants taste bitter. And you can replicate that response very easily by overdoing nitrogen fertilizer. And so there's a question of, well, what defines overdoing it? And that's a context-dependent question. It depends on the soil, depends on the context, depends on the plants. But a plant that is lush and vegetative and green and looks visually appealing to us may not necessarily be palatable and be particularly attractive to deer if it's been over-fertilized with nitrogen.
All right, excellent point.
So to come back to your question originally, the forages that are the most palatable, that have the best flavor, are forages that where the root system is colonized by microbes, and the majority of the nutrition that those plants are getting is coming from biology. And where they have this functional biology combined with very strong trace mineral nutrition, zinc, manganese, copper, boron, all the elements you've been describing, plus sulfur, phosphorus. And obviously, the macronutrients are essential as well. But it's really the trace minerals and the biology that shift a plant from visually appealing to us to incredibly taste appealing to mammals in general. We know, so in our professional agronomy consulting work, one of our foundations is balancing plant nutrition so that we have good immune function and we have resistance to diseases and insects. Well, when you improve plant health and you get resistance to diseases and insects, you actually increase the susceptibility to gophers and moles and deer and birds, because what happens is invariably the sugar content goes up. You get higher Brix readings, you have higher sugar content, and those plants become more palatable and more attractive to deer and to mammals in general.
John, we've talked a little bit on this podcast about Brix specifically. I know you go through different processes to actually have more detailed information surrounding, you know, nutrients in the plants themselves, but Brix, you know, a little rudimentary, but necessary for the average person. And I've seen on my particular property, my Brix level started at 2 or 3. I'm at 6 or 7 now, just with 3 or 4 years of work. We've got really poor soils here in the Northeast, deficient in many different aspects. Zinc, obviously being one of those, copper, amongst many other elements, whether the metals or not. I've really noticed a change because of the biology and the biological inoculants that I've been using, in some cases compost teas. And I think I relate some of my changes to the fundamental balancing. I applied large swaths of rock dust 5 years ago, looking at balancing every aspect of the soil. That has been a complete learning curve for me. And I've developed just recently from inputs with different people in the industry, is, you know, how to balance your soils. Look at McGibbons, some of his information out there from Logan Labs. But at some point, you know, I'm trying to control every aspect of this to get these Brix levels up a bit. And, you know, it's, again, it's not the Gabe Browns where I'm at 12 or 14% Brix in certain plants, but it's improved and it's a slow progression and improvement. And I know that has a lot to do with the biological piece of this and balancing the soils. I don't need to be an expert in every area of my life, but I need to have higher Brix levels. And I think the process to get there is a little more complicated than I necessarily understand. It's a complementary aspect of looking at, we'll say, cohesion of plants, the related soil, and thinking more about the timing, keeping, I think, plants in a vegetative state, at least in my world, and being more practical in the sense that applying biologicals, some of these compost teas, at certain intervals at a decent rate. And I just say that with, you know, I don't know if there's a one right size fits all for all these particular properties, but looking at just a small change in Brix is really important. And I kind of want to ask you, you know, there's some basics, right? Looking at water infiltration, air in the soil, mineral content. I know there's a lot of focus here on mineral already. I think there's an aspect to each one of these that are relevant. This is the whole ecologist side of looking at soils. How do you approach this topic? And I want to talk about the plant pyramid in a second, but, you know, when you're looking at a very, very high level, and this is a completely loaded question, your process to evaluating soils, and I remember there's a Cornell, I think, guy that came out, I don't know how many years ago, it's probably been over 10 years that I looked through, and just assessing soils and, you know, again, being in touch with your soils. What are the processes that you go to on your own personal property, balancing soils, looking at plants? Obviously, there's, you know, using it usually for your own purposes. Just walk us through some of your mindset. I want to hear you talk about your process.
Okay. I want to go back to the Brix conversation for just a moment to provide an anecdote, an example.
Okay.
I have about half of my father's family lives up in Huron County in the Thumb of Michigan, where there is, or there used to be, a very intense deer population. It's thinned out a little bit now, but it's still there. And one of them, the dairy farm, and they had this hay field that was a blend of alfalfa and grass hay. After working with the nutrition, I did the consulting work on his farm for a couple of years, and we looked at the soil, changed the soil mineral profile. He added some soil amendments. And the unfortunately for him, the 40-acre field backed up against the woods. And it would be common for them to count upwards of 200 deer out in that field in the evening after a couple of years. It didn't initially, early on in the first year, perhaps even the first 2 years, his field had very comparable deer pressure to everywhere else. By year three, his field would be loaded with deer, and the other fields for a mile around or more would be completely empty. He was pulling deer from everywhere else because of the high Brix content and the exceptional palatability of the forages that he was producing. So that's the very real-world practical implementation, practical application. When you have high Brix content plants, you will pull deer from a distance. They know. They know things that we don't know. They know which has the best flavor. So from a very practical, high-level, 10,000-foot view, how do you get there? I would say there are three foundational pieces, particularly for us when, as you go east of the 98th meridian and you have high rainfall environment here where we are in Ohio, Michigan, and on further east, when you have 40 plus inches of average annual rainfall, we have highly weathered soils and we have minerals that have been depleted and have been leached out of our soils because of our historical agricultural management practices, because of acid rainfall, because of a whole lot of things that we have done as mankind in our civilization. We have interrupted the natural mineral cycles in a lot of ways over the last 200 years. And we are paying the consequences for that in ways that are not as true further west where you have low rainfall environments. So the three macro pieces are, one is you have to address the minerals that are no longer present in our soil the way they were historically. Second, we need to have good soil biology. And third, we need diverse plant families, diverse plant species. And I'm of the persuasion that if you address those three things, the other pieces that you mentioned, such as soil aggregation and water infiltration rates and soil compaction, when you have a diversity of plant species plus good mineral nutrition plus good biology, they will solve all those other problems. They will solve for soil compaction. They will solve for water infiltration. You can regenerate soil to a remarkable degree. And I think the one piece that most people are missing is the value of diverse plant families. There's something, this is, I don't have hard science around this. I just have a lot, millions of acres of real world practical experience. There is something that changes in the way plant communities behave and the way soil behaves when you have species diversity that comes from more than eight different plant families. Once you have eight or more, some contexts, some settings, we see the similar reactions happening with seven or more. But at eight or more plant families, the whole soil microbial community and plant community begins collaborating with each other instead of competing with each other, and some remarkable things start happening.
Yeah, I've seen many articles on this as of over the past 5 years, so I can relate to that 100%. You bring up a bunch of different things, and I like just the basic foundational approach, and that's really, really simple. I've applied foliars and I've made some of my own foliars, and I've started to apply those just not in my food plots but throughout my woodlots or shrubland areas, and I've started to be more in touch with plant health, at least in a larger scale. And this biodiversity, and I don't know, you know, what exactly complements that, but producing some form, and actually when Kittredge was on here, we talked a little bit about salting the earth. I mean, we have uses of sea salt. We've recommended that on client properties where they have low sodium levels, chlorine, etc. I feel like, or chloride, excuse me. I feel like there's an opportunity to, you know, leverage some basic principles across a larger landscape area. And to your point earlier, once you start making some of these changes, you start to attract deer at a higher rate. That creates a whole other issue of problems that have to remedy, including disease in some examples. But I think really, you know, deer themselves are going to be highly attracted to these properties. That's why in a small acreage, you can have these amazing hunting experiences that you may not have, you know, like you said, on a normal property that doesn't influence it the way that we're talking about here. One thing that I wanted to get to just briefly was there's been a lot of discussion just around how plants absorb nutrients and getting away from some of the traditional means, and I mean this traditional in the sense that fertilizer is a traditional mean of supplementing or providing resources to plants. Can you quickly explain just how generally the biology works and some of the root architecture around just absorption and excretion of carbon, and then maybe a little bit about how that relates to the environment and how you have a more diverse microbial set as a result of maybe the plants, maybe the biology related and nutrients? Maybe you just kind of hit on all those three topics.
Three big topics in 3 minutes. All right. So I'm just going to, I'll come back to some of the more, the science pieces behind it, but let's start by talking about practical application of what we do on farms today. There's been this theory, that is, the theory is supported in part, that biology can extract all the minerals that are required from the soil mineral matrix and make them available to plants. And that is partially true. The reason it's not entirely true is because biology can only access and release what is present in the soil mineral matrix from a parent bedrock geological foundation perspective. It's like here in the East, in high rainfall environments where we have highly weathered soils, the reality is that our soils have been largely depleted of selenium and molybdenum and boron. And boron, for example, is foundational. It's fundamental to having good calcium metabolism in a mammalian body, in our body, in the body of a deer. It's everyone is talking about the importance of calcium for good antler growth and antler development. But the reality is if you're having a conversation with calcium without talking about boron, you have no idea what's going on. You can have very high calcium levels in forages, but if you don't address boron, that calcium is non-functional. So my point is simply that. So from a practical perspective, our approach today is we run a less common soil analysis that is called a total digestion analysis that measures everything that is parent, that is present in the parent bedrock material. And it quantifies what the biology is actually capable of releasing and what it isn't. And what you discover is that here in eastern high rainfall environments, some soil amendments of some of these trace minerals, if you have these goals of having exceptional forage quality and palatability and attractiveness, you have to address some of these minerals as a soil amendment. So that's part one. So then to the question that you asked, what's the science around how plants absorb nutrients? Well, as a plant is growing in a vegetative growth state, producing sugars, it transmits these sugars, a large proportion of these sugars, out through the roots as root exudates. So there's variation, of course, from plant species to plant species, but as a general rule of thumb, when a plant is in a vegetative growth state and it's putting out new shoot growth, that new shoot growth represents as little as 30% of that plant's overall sugar production. The majority of it, somewhere between 50 and 70%, goes out through the roots as root exudates. And so it is this sugar in the soil that feeds biology. It feeds bacteria, it feeds fungal populations. And that biology, if you think about sugar, sugar is simply carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. There are no minerals in sugar. There's no zinc, manganese, copper, calcium in sugar. And so bacteria feed on these sugars, but they need minerals to form their own cells. So they extract minerals from the soil mineral matrix, incorporate them into their own cells, into their own bodies. And then as that bacterial population cycles and other microorganisms feed on them, there is this nutrient release that happens where the plant roots are now able to access nutrients that were released from the biology. And this is how native ecosystems have derived their nutrition for millennia.
Yeah, it seems pretty fundamental. It's almost along the lines of the movie Avatar and the connectivity amongst trees in these fungal communities, amongst other things. You talked about the nutrients and the biological.
Avatar is just a pale imitation of what actually happens in real life. The way these plants communicate with each other is incredible.
Well, the signaling piece of it's kind of interesting too. One of the things that I think we've hit on this podcast before is plant responses to grazing. And that's a kind of a brief topic, but you know, some of these, the flavonoids or the flavor in some of these resources, you know, forages for animals, I think is one of the things that we have a hard time kind of diagnosing. You mentioned a second ago that you do some analysis. I think this is sap analysis that you may do with plants. And I think that's amongst many different growers that you work with. Is there a large difference between the level of information you get when doing those versus some of the BRICS testing? Because BRICS seems pretty basic.
Yeah, there's at least two orders of magnitude difference in the quantity and the value of the information that you get. And so with the sap analysis, we are measuring the actual measured sugar content as compared to the BRICS reading. It's quite a different metric than the BRICS reading. And we're also measuring 22 parameters in total: nitrate, nitrogen versus ammonium versus total nitrogen, all the different more common more common minerals, plus a whole array of the less common minerals, such as silicon and selenium and molybdenum and cobalt, etc. And then in addition, we also do a lot of forage analysis where we work with a lot of dairies. And the forage analysis is also very revealing. And you have to, if you want to have a good representation for the attractiveness of a forage, it quickly becomes clear. Once you start observing animal behavior and animal productivity in the case of dairy cows, you quickly realize that the desirability of a plant is mostly correlated with the trace mineral content, more so than almost any other factor.
That's a game changer. That's something that I've briefed on this podcast every now and again. And I really kind of gathered that from your podcast. I think that's a major overlooked topic. Let me flip the script on you. Let's go. Let's talk about the plant health pyramid. It's something that you came up with a few years ago. And one of the topics that comes up is, I think in general, we call this canvassing, but looking at plant structure above ground, leaf architecture, and photosynthesis, so basically collection of sunlight, and then the processing, and being more efficient in that. And then in this whole plant pyramid, and there was a great book, I think Brunetti was the gentleman who wrote the book, I think it was like a farm ecology book, that it was kind of triggered my thinking on all this. I started to learn a little bit more. I really felt like there is a better understanding how plants create or synthesize protein and the value and complete proteins. And I think that's something that I'd like to hit on. Maybe you could explain a little bit about that. So maybe you could just walk up the plant health pyramid, why you came up with it, and just some of the particularities around it.
Well, I could talk about the plant health pyramid for about 4 hours to really describe the science that's behind it. So I'm happy to do a quick introduction, but if you want to dig deeper, just do a quick search on my name. I'm sure you can link to some resources. John Kempf, the Plant Health Pyramid. We have a dedicated webpage on our Advancing Eco-Agriculture company site where we have infographics, and we go into some detail about the science that's behind the Plant Health Pyramid. But the way it came about, as we were working with growers, many different types of crops and different soil and ecosystem contexts, we observed this gradual development or evolution, if you will, of different stages of plant health based on what was happening with plant physiology, where we observed these four fairly distinct stages. The first stage is when plants had very good photosynthesis and they became resistant to all of the root diseases. So root diseases where you have root die back, root die off, stems dying, fruit being destroyed, whatever the case might be. The second stage is when plants had started developing complete proteins, and they no longer had high levels of soluble nitrates or ammonium in the plant sap. And at that stage, they became resistant to all of the insect pests, or to most of the insect pests, with the exception of adult beetles. So aphids, flea beetles, wireworms, all the larval insects such as tomato hornworm and European corn borer and cabbage looper. And those are a reflection of a plant that is overloaded with nitrogen or doesn't have the nutrients that it needs to convert nitrogen into proteins. And we discovered there were four critical nutrient elements. There were magnesium, sulfur, molybdenum, and boron. And that when plants had adequate levels of those four elements, their resistance to the insects in this category went from very low to upper 90 percentile. Then the third level of the plant health pyramid occurred once you had a really good biology in the soil. Plants develop this glossy, waxy sheen on the leaf surface, and they become much more resistant to all the airborne diseases, both bacterial and fungal diseases, so mildews and rusts, etc. And then lastly, the fourth level at the top of the pyramid is when plants developed much higher concentrations of these phytonutrient compounds, the terpenoids, the phenolics, the phytoalexins. In plain English, we call these essential oils. These are flavor and aroma compounds, many of them. And all plants produce these compounds as plant protectants to protect themselves from ultraviolet radiation, from disease attack, from insect attack, from overgrazing. And we found that it's possible for plants to increase and to upregulate the synthesis of those compounds in many cases by anywhere from 10x to 200x. There's wild variability in the concentrations of these compounds. And when we have higher levels of these compounds being produced, depending on which plant species and which compounds we're talking about, the plants become much more attractive to deer, and they become very, and to people, have much better flavor, and they become very resistant to adult insects in the beetle family. So Colorado potato beetle, cucumber beetle, Japanese beetle, marmorated stink bugs, etc. So that's the plant health pyramid in 90 seconds. And there's a lot more information available online about exactly how to produce those outcomes on scale.
John, I think it's important for people to go look at that resource, because I think most people, at least in the field that I'm in, may not necessarily understand the developments that you came up with. And these are, I think, really important. And I would also say that, you know, I've kind of used that as a foundation to understand my step approach to looking at soil improvement. Thanks, everybody. That is part one of this series. Part two is going to get into more depth and information as it pertains to your food plots, design, attraction, all the things that are essential for soil, soil health, and interest to our deer. Thanks for listening.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay three nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
A KFC tail in the pursuit of flavor. The colonel despised the word empty. Empty plates, empty tables, empty stomachs. That's why he made the KFC $5 bowls, like the famous bowl. Creamy mashed potatoes, crispy chicken, corn, gravy, and cheese. Because the only empty the colonel liked was when you reached the bottom of that bowl. The colonel lived, so we could chicken. Five KFC bowls for just $5 each.
Prices and participation may vary. Taxes, tips, and fees extra.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.